You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
Lindsay Clancy verdict. We're getting hopefully closer to something, a conclusion of some sort. And we're going to be discussing this in depth today, what went on in that courtroom, not just what we saw on cameras, on the videos that we've seen, but what was it like mere feet away from Lindsay in that room, from the jurors, from the family who was supporting her, from the prosecution that was trying to take her down. Bob Mata is going to be joining us shortly to give us that insight. But the breaking moment or breaking news of the moment, I guess I should say, as we're coming on the air to you this morning live, is that the jury came back this morning saying, surprise, we're deadlocked. And this happens in a lot of cases. This is not, you know, the first time that a jury comes back and says that and then gets sent back, because that's exactly what the judge did. The judge sent them back and said, work a little harder. See if you can figure something out. And that's where we are sitting as of right now. Joining me to begin this discussion, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, and masterclass instructor extraordinaire. Yeah. We'll have the link in the description to go check that out. That is launched now. You can learn from Robin on masterclass now. No shit. I know. It's pretty cool. Let's begin. I mean, are you surprised, Robin, that we're sitting here? What are we? This is day 3, 4? What are we at?
Oh, I had to count up, but I turned the TV off.
I think we're at four. I could be wrong. Yeah, four.
It's four.
They got the hourly
day
count.
Four of deliberations, and we do not have a verdict. Your thoughts?
I think it's good, believe it or not. And I think Bob, when he comes on, I listen to Bob a lot. Matter of fact, and even one of the comments here by Brian Bravo Candy Betch, we listen to each other a lot, and even with Jennifer Coffendeffer on, she's a good friend of all of ours, and we text a lot, and we talk a lot about each other's points of view and flesh them out. And so even when Bob comes on, I remember we've covered a lot of cases with Bob, and he hates it when there's a quick, oh, there he is. Bob, I'm speaking for you for a sec.
He hates it.
I'm going to finish my thoughts, so then you pick up. Bob hates it when the jury comes out quick, means they didn't do their job. And so Tony asked me the question, what I think about the jury still being in deliberation. I said, that's a good thing. It shows they're actually doing the hard work, and this is a hard work case, no doubt. Bob, what do you think about that?
Yeah, so here we are.
Are you guys are aware that they come out and deadlocked, right?
Just talked about that. Yep. Said that. Right. So that's where the reactions we're making right now.
Doing their job.
Judge sent him back in. From your experience here, what does this mean? What are your thoughts?
So the way that it works in Massachusetts is when the jury sends out a note saying that we're deadlocked, mostly deadlocked, they'll do what they call kind of like a soft jury charge. All right. So before they do what's been referred to as a dynamite charge, an Allen charge, and in Massachusetts it's called a Tui Rodriguez charge. And it's a much more thorough charge to the jury to say, look, you know, we understand it, and it's written out. And the way that the legislature and you know, the appellate courts have looked at the Tui charge is that they recommend that the instruction is read exactly as it's written. So when that happens, and the judge has to have found that there's been thorough and deliberate deliberations, or due and thorough deliberations by the jury before they'll give that heavy duty 2E charge. Because the argument, and there's, you know, a lot of kind of esoteric arguments about these charges, and, you know, are you forcing the jury to go back and to basically bend their will of the way that they feel deep, deep down, even though the instruction says, we're not asking you to go against your conscience, okay? And uh-huh. We're not asking you, if you have a strongly held belief, to put that aside in order to compromise just to come to a verdict. But the thing kind of speaks for itself.
So it's, you know, like, when you, we're kind of asking you to do that, but not directly on paper.
Exactly.
It's kind of like a passive aggressive of, hey, everybody get your shit together and come back with an answer. The judge would really like one.
Exactly.
But I guess how, so it's essentially, you know, for the lay people, a little strongly, more strongly worded encouragement to come back with an answer, essentially.
Yeah. You know, but look, man, I've been saying this since before the trial. Like this is a case.
Yeah.
Where I just don't think, I don't care how many they could try it 100 times.
I don't think we're ready to get
there. They're never going to get a verdict on it, because people just feel the way they feel about this. The mm-hmm. folks that are of the mindset, if you do this to your children, you mm-hmm. have to be punished. I mm-hmm. don't care what the reason is behind it. I don't care if you were teeming with psychosis. That doesn't matter. The mm-hmm. fact is whatever led you to this point where you did this to your own children, you have to be punished. Those folks are never moving off that position, ever. Sure. I don't care how much evidence is put before them. I don't care how many experts take the stand. I don't care if, you know, you have every expert from both sides saying, yeah, she was in psychosis. Those folks are never changing that position. That is how they feel.
Yeah.
And no one's changing their mind out. And you know, when they brought in the manslaughter charge, which I wasn't really a fan of. I understood why it was done. Legally, it doesn't fit with the facts, and it doesn't jive at all with the fact that there is a not guilty by lack of criminal responsibility defense that has been put forth. It doesn't work, because by operation of bringing forth that defense, you are saying, look, we're admitting that my client did the acts. Okay, uh-huh. So that's not at issue. What we're saying to you is that she can't be held responsible because of the state of her brain.
Yeah.
And so, like, because with manslaughter, those two things don't work. So it's like a legal fiction that it exists. The thought was that, look, we're going to bring the manslaughter in. I think that M1, like the murder one people, would move towards that. Based on the evidence in terms of the care that she received, I think that they could be, as long as she's going in.
Let me, I want to ask you about the murder, about the manslaughter charge a little bit, and what it could possibly mean if they settle on that. So let's say she gets manslaughter. It's a you know, lesser sentence. Yep. So there is a time where she could very realistically be free. It's different than the not guilty by reason of insanity, where she goes into an institution and then has yearly reviews, and, you know, may stay in forever.
Yeah.
Manslaughter, there's an end date from that sentence at the prison that she'd be going to. Yeah. From what I understand, Bob, I mean, so in once, like, the not guilty by reason of insanity, doesn't that actually present an opportunity where she could be truly locked up forever, getting mental health care? The manslaughter, that kind of takes it off the table, if I'm understanding that correctly, doesn't it? It's just like, you're going to prison for manslaughter, and when you're out, you're out. And if you need mental health help, well, let's hope you got insurance.
Yeah, I mean, potentially. So there's a range in Massachusetts for manslaughter, and I believe that it's anywhere from 5 to 20 years.
Yep.
And it's 3 counts. So she would be sentenced to each individual child 5 to 20 years, whatever the judge decides in terms of a sentence. Also, based on people that I've spoken to that practice in Mass, it is the judge's discretion as to whether or not he's going to have those sentences run concurrently, which mean at the same time, mm-hmm. or consecutively, meaning she does the whatever he sentences her to. Say he sentences her to 20 on Cora, and then the same on Dawson, and then the same on Callan, which would be a 60-year sentence ultimately. And in truth in sentencing requires that they serve, I believe it's 85%. It might be a little
higher. Yeah, 2/3 is what I looked up this morning, I think,
yeah,
Bob.
Yeah, so
2/3 of the sentences before they're eligible for parole.
Right. So, you know, that's a thing. And the difference between murder one is it's mandatory life.
Like, yep, there's no
discretion in it, no parole. You're done, you're in, you're over with. So, you know, and my thing with this case has been, you know, when you talk about the concept of whether or not Reddington should have advised his client, maybe this is the one where we go a bench trial as opposed to going to a jury on it. And I wasn't sure. I thought that somebody had emailed me something when I had made that first kind of suggestion or put that thought out there. If this was a case where maybe you're going to the judge and saying, all right, look, you know, we think this is a bench trial. It's a very difficult issue to decide. You know, but with a judge, you're not getting a hung jury ever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, the judge is making a decision one way or another. But I thought that somebody had sent me an email saying that on M1 in Massachusetts that you couldn't waive jury. But I don't think that that's correct. Like, I've never heard of not being able to waive your right to a jury. But I'm not going to die on that hill because I haven't looked up the law in Massachusetts. So, but as to your other point, yeah, I mean, it's not just if she is a danger to others, it's is she a danger to herself?
Yeah.
And I don't know that there's ever going to be a day that Lindsay Clancy isn't going to be a danger to herself.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I mean? You can have the same thing where she's healthy enough mentally in there to be able to put on the mask, like, oh yeah, no, you know, I'm not, I have no desire to end my own life anymore. And that's all just a mask, you know? And then because right now she's still one-on-one. She has somebody watching her 24/7 because she's still a risk of unaliving herself. So, you know, in theory, yeah. I mean, she could stay in there for the rest of her natural life. And I'm talking about the mental health facility. You know, but the problem is that the concept, and it was the thing that ultimately, and I don't think that would have mattered in Gacy, but when Bill Kunkel, the lead prosecutor in Gacy, suggested that there exists a possibility in the world that John Wayne Gacy could be cured and he could be released back into society. Like, you can imagine what the jury was thinking about that concept. They were like, their heads exploded, their eyes rolled back in their skulls. They were like, what? You know, like, and obviously that was objected to. I don't know that it ever should have been brought out in front of the jury, because once those words were uttered, that there was even a remote chance that this dude's going to be out on the streets again, that was it. You know, and it was like, that was a case, like, he's the poster boy for the death penalty. I'm anti-death penalty as a general proposition, but, you know, there's exceptions to that.
Yeah, so I looked it up. Massachusetts, first-degree murder is the exception. You cannot request bench trial in Massachusetts on
that. There you go. So that person was correct.
The interesting, there's so many interesting things this, Bob. It's been so mentally exhausting. To the point, if this was going on, because when I... You know, my legal side is not nearly as strong as anyone else's because I spent my time on behavior stuff. But, you know, if this is being tried, and as I got it right here, Idaho, Kansas, Montana, Utah, and Alaska, you know, this wouldn't even be a discussion because it is like a lot of people want. Just guilty, killed her kids, and then we're going to use these as mitigating factors for sentencing, which is the incongruence just in the legal system on cases like this across our country is actually quite mind-boggling to me, because when you're doing these deep dives to try to understand where people are coming from and why they have a certain point of view, when you see where people live, you see their experiences, and then I'm not even bringing in the religious aspect of this because people have that aspect as well. It's easy to see why people are so divided, because our country is extremely divided on one simple, not simple. This is the most complex thing I've ever faced and looked at in my life as well. I've probably done more, again, sorry about the me statements in this case about them. I have learned more on this case because I've covered this case as well as doing your Gacy files at the same time. My mind is legally exploding trying to understand it all because this is extremely complex.
It really is, man.
Yeah,
it,
I mean, there's so many elements to this thing, and I want to talk about what was going on in the courtroom, but I want to address one quick question here that I saw that someone had posted about the pharmacist. Because I think it's a valid question to a certain extent, but I think the answer might surprise a lot of people. No one mentions the pharmacist who dispensed her medications. Why did they not flag all the meds that were being prescribed at their possible conflicting side effects? Because this shit happens all the time, everywhere you look.
Yep.
And because this is normal. That's why.
That's what it's become.
Yeah.
Like, throw the drugs at them. Like, they receive no actual therapy, you know, and you had a situation here where none of the providers, not one of them, did a blood draw to see what was in her system.
Yeah.
You know, because you have Lindsay reporting.
Yep.
And it's one thing to assume that your patient is being accurate, mm-hmm. you know, and truthful about what they've been prescribed. But no one was doing the homework. Not one provider was looking and seeing what the other providers had prescribed to her, nor were they looking at her blood to see what she was actually taking and what was in her system. So, you know, I mean, that's part of the problem. Like, we don't know, as we sit here now, we've gone through all the evidence in this case, we have no idea if, in fact, we go all the way back to the Zoloft as being the trigger for where we ended up in January.
Yeah.
So when we go from September to January and she gets this cocktail, this polypharmaceutical cocktail, and where we don't know, as to the excellent comment that was just made, we don't know how they're interacting with one another. And more importantly, her healthcare providers did not know how they were interacting with one another. And then on top of it, they were continuing to prescribe other medications, not knowing how they were playing with one another. And I'm talking about the pharmaceuticals within her mind. And then you have to be able to consider the fact that, number one, she had stopped breastfeeding in October, which adds a whole nother element to this case, which really Reddington kind of threw in there with respect to the cross of one of their, because there was a woman that was supposed to be testifying on behalf of the defense, and her name was Margaret Spinelli. And she's kind of the authority in the world in terms of postpartum depression, postpartum psychosis. She would have been the one who would have been explaining to the jury, educating the jury on what happens within a woman's body, hormonally speaking, before, during, and after when they give birth, mm-hmm. you know, and that is like kind of a gaping hole in this thing in terms of just fleshing out, trying to figure out how this thing ended up the way that it did, because it's not as simple as the people that are wanting an eye for an eye.
No,
and I understand it. I understand that those folks exist in the world, and it's very simple. We're a revenge-driven society. That's how this country has always been. The problem for me, and my rebuttal to those folks is quit ignoring our brains. I mean, what is more important in terms of figuring out, for the quality of life purpose, than understanding what the hell is going on in our brains? Because if you think the DSM and psychologists and psychiatrists aren't doing anything other than practicing, which is exactly why they call it, we practice medicine, we know so little about the human mind that it requires us to move the needle in terms of mental illness in this country and really give it the attention that it requires, because we've talked about this on the last three lives, man.
Yeah.
All you need to do is scroll through social media for 20 fucking minutes and you see what is going on in this country. It is constant chaos every single place I look.
And it's normalized, and we're used
to it.
And we feel weird without it almost. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I looked up, and just talking about the pharmaceutical side of things, I did look up responsibility, culpability, not necessarily in that way, but to try to understand what they could or couldn't have done and how it wasn't flagged. And so what it came back with was these were common prescriptions for mental health. And so that didn't flag because of the types of prescriptions. They were done in series and not in parallel, basically. So they weren't on top of each other. So that wouldn't have flagged anything for interactions.
Yeah, there was nothing to flag.
And the other thing, too, is a lot of these, so a lot of the flags that happen inside of pharmacies, it's program driven. In other words, the software doesn't flag it. And so if you have multiple providers that aren't talking, because that's the other thing, too, is it wasn't just one provider. So it wouldn't have flagged anything. Multiple different providers, common prescriptions, and in series and not in parallel. So they didn't have to look at interactions. That was actually part of the reason why it got missed,
well, and a lot of obviously. It's like we said yesterday, like it's like, okay, you're going to be on 10 milligrams of this. Oh, that's not working for you. We're going to up it to this. Oh, we're going to lower you to this. So you consistently have a bottle of pills that has about 25 in because they keep changing it. Now, why the doctors were changing it that frequently, that's what needs to be seriously examined and why they couldn't communicate with one or the other. I get why the pharmacy filled them. The pharmacy's following the directives of the doctors. These are not medications that are typically abused to a level like you would have for pain pills or things of that nature. These are not those types of drugs. People aren't popping these super right. recreationally or anything like that. So they're not the type that typically get that sort of scrutiny. And they're just typically up or done. We're talking, it was 30 different prescriptions, but 13 meds in total that were being adjusted up and down over the course of the time. So that's, I mean, it makes sense to understand how we got here, but why the system allowed us to be there is the bigger question. I got one more question in this segment before we move to the next one. You were in the courtroom for a good chunk of this thing. You were in there. Patrick's there. Lindsay's there. The families are there. We're seeing it on a screen. There's something very different about being in that actual gallery, though. Yeah. The emotional reality of what everybody was going through. How would you describe what it felt like in there?
Heavy.
Yeah.
Incredibly heavy. You know, it's like you're, and it's funny because, you know, they'll take breaks. You're sitting in the courtroom. You can hear a pin drop. You know, I mean, like you feel the weight of the courtroom. You feel, you know, just the overall power of being in that room because everybody feels it. You know, the jury's feeling it. The attorneys feel it. The gallery feels it. Obviously, the defendant feels it. The family. It's just, it's the equivalent to really kind of what I was really hoping that Reddington, and I'm never critical of him because I think he's a absolutely phenomenal. He's one of the best litigators in the country when it comes to criminal defense law. But the one thing that I would have loved for him to been able to kind of like highlight for the jury is the fact that you have Dr. Resnick, who is the preeminent psychiatrist, psychologist, I can't remember which one he is, on the planet in terms of filicide and in terms of his work on malingering with respect to hallucinations, mm-hmm. you know, whether determining whether or not somebody's lying or over-reporting with respect to hallucinations. So, but you had him on a screen, right? So you're sitting there. So, because if you'll remember when Tufts was on the stand, Dr. Jennifer Tufts, and, you know, Red kept referring to it. Oh, so that was via television, right? It was a funny little thing in terms of the way that he did it, but he was doing it intentionally to drive home the point that there's a massive difference between looking at somebody on a screen and being in the same room as that person. Mm-hmm. And the stark contrast is when you think about the Commonwealth's two experts, forget about Mac. But, you know, we'll talk about Heilbrunn and what is it, Sadoff?
Sadoff.
They were in the room, you know, and they would turn and look at the jury when they were giving an answer. So the jurors could observe what they were doing with their hands. They could observe everything that they were doing when they were sitting on the stand. And I would have liked to have heard Reddington in order to contrast the treatment that Lindsay got through these telehealth appointments. And again, I'm not shitting on telehealth, but there is a difference between having somebody in your office for a personal one-on-one human connection consultation and looking at them on a screen.
Yeah.
You know, if you were in the room with Tony, Robin, and I, and we were having a discussion, it would feel vastly different than you sitting at home watching us on your computer or your television. Mm-hmm. It's just a different experience. And I would have liked to have seen Red point that out. I wanted him to say, I want you to think about the preeminent expert on these two areas that we discussed and how you felt about watching him on a screen, and think about the difference that you felt when you were listening to the Commonwealth's expert who was sitting 6 feet away from you. You know, that feeling that you're feeling in terms of, yeah, that was a different experience. That's what I want you to understand about the care that Lindsay received. And I think it would have really driven that home, because, you know, again, at the end of the day, and in Robin, everything that you pulled up with respect to the pharmaceuticals is important, but what's also important is that she clearly, in my estimation, had a manic episode mm-hmm. after Dawson was born. And Tufts was completely unaware of it.
I agree.
If she was in mania during and after Dawson was born, and she's not aware of it, and she prescribes her an SSRI, that's what I'm saying. That could have been the impetus of everything that happens thereafter. You know, it's like, and then she's having the reaction that you're not supposed to have in terms of helping her sleep. It made her worse. It made her more anxious. It increased her insomnia. So these red flags went up, and then Tufts never did anything to go back to try to figure it out. Her solution was to say, all right, well, we'll switch up the meds, and we'll give this one a shot, and we'll give this one a shot. And, you know, and again, my view is, if we could be a fly on the wall and Jennifer Tufts, you know, having a drink with her friend after work one day, and she's just talking about some of her patients. She's like, oh yeah, I got a real pain in the ass. You know, she's a nurse, you know, she knows it all. I keep trying to help her. I don't know if she's overreporting. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's that thing where, like, I can't remember. I've made the comparison so many times. Like, where if I've represented an attorney in a case, you know, like, what,
they can be the biggest pain in the ass client. Oh my God. Well, dude,
I'm telling them, we're not collaborating on this.
It's Alec Murdaugh, you know, representing, exactly. Don't take the stand. Don't take the stand. And he takes the stand.
Exactly.
They're going to make decisions that may not be in their best interest because of ego to a certain extent. Right. But again, I hear that argument too. Well, she made these choices. Yes, she didn't make the choice to fall into a state of psychosis, though. You can make dumb choices. You can make ignorant choices. You can make choices that are not going to that are not going to be great for you. And of course, you're going to make a lot of them when you're not in a good mental state. But again, and none of it erases the fact of, here's what your brain ended up doing to you on top of the cocktail of medications that you've been going on and off of. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to break down the Lindsay Clancy case, as the jury is still out as of this recording.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend, because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino, with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. By American players, for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.